the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. It's Thursday, and that means it's time for us to connect with Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, and his appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. And Brent, nothing says game week. Granted, we're still 9 days away, but also still... you guys are starting the game week conversation with the mailbag and everything, the podcast at VolQuest, and last night we had the first edition of VolCall. So no doubt about it, it feels like it's here, doesn't it?
Well, we got a little fall weather on top of that, so yeah, it feels right, and you know, I think everybody's just kind of sitting around almost chewing on their fingernails a little bit, hoping that you know, you get through next week. I mean, here's North Carolina today, thought they were going to play a game on Saturday in 48 hours, and they learned that they can't play because Charlotte didn't have enough offensive linemen to field the team, basically. So that game is canceled. So, yeah, there's excitement building, but there's also plenty of anxiousness because you just don't know what's coming around the corner.
Before we get to a further conversation of Tennessee football, 656-9900. If you have a question or comment for Brent, 656-9900. Awfully good showing last week for Gibbs, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's fun. I got back in the win column, which was good. And, you know, we'll see what happens this week against a really good Campbell County team. I'm just so happy that we're heading into week five. And let me say this, too. Hats off to the coaching staff, the administrators, the schools at Central and Powell for playing this week. Both of them ended up with an open date with a game that had gotten canceled, and we're going to set it home on Friday night. And hats off to those two programs because neither one of them said, well, can't play because we don't want to show too much maybe for the playoffs later or this. Hey, it's a bunch of community kids that know each other, that have played against each other since they were, you know, 6, 7 years old playing football. Hey, let's get together on a Saturday night in front of some fans and let's play, you know, a football game, and it just happens to be two of the better teams in the area. So I applaud both of those programs on short notice for being able to say, hey, you know what? I'm good. You good? Let's go play. Let's put the ball out there in the parking lot, so to speak, and go play. So looking forward to that game on Saturday. But, yeah, it was good to get back in the win column last Friday night.
Well, tell us this. And, well, actually, before I ask this question, I'll just throw in the cheap plug, and that is we're looking forward to carrying that game. So we'll have a special pregame starting at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, as we'll be at Joel Helton Field for the Bobcats playing host to Powell, teams 1-3 in the state in 5A football. And I think you say it very well, Brent. There are many more schools that would find reasons not to do it as opposed to these two schools finding a way to make it happen.
Absolutely, and we've seen that in the first few weeks. We don't really want to play, or no, we can't do that. I mean, these two teams decided middle of the week, you know, hey, yeah, we'll play. I mean, you know, we're cramming some film study in, but it's about the kids, and it's about getting to play and getting to compete. Look, we hope that we get through a full regular season and a full playoffs that the TSSAA has, and, you know, hopefully, you know, there's a chance these two teams play later on down the road, but why sit around and wonder? Let's just go play right now if you got the opportunity to go play. That's what competitors do. And, again, I applaud both coaching staffs and the school administration at both places for making it happen.
So tell us, how does Gibbs sophomore Eli Hubbs, how does he celebrate a win? Is it with a good lift and more film study of next week's opponent?
It was a lot of Pedialyte Friday night. That's what it was. That's what we've done. The last 2 weeks have been a lot of Pedialyte. It was hot last week, and I think he thought he hydrated pretty well, but probably needed to hydrate a little bit better. So there was a celebration of some Pedialyte with him on the way home and once he got home. So that was that, and then cryotherapy on Saturday morning, and then some homework that he took in on Saturday. So I don't I don't think anybody's going to confuse him for the party animal, John Wilkerson.
Good to hear.
Hey, Brent, do you think with the compliments we've heard from Javonte Spraggins, from coaches and players alike, that he's a guy that will end up playing some meaningful snaps?
Certainly sounds like it right now, Jimmy. You know, we don't know exactly how many reps guys like Kayron Calvert have missed out on, and Jerome Carvin, and some of those guys that have been through some quarantine situations. We know Wanya Morris has missed the most of anybody on the offensive line. And, of course, Tennessee's still waiting to learn something on Cade Mays. But how can you have a whole lot of optimism with where that one is right now? Just the fact that it's been silent for so long here. I think there's a real chance that in some cases he's the first guy off the bench, particularly on the right side. I don't know about on the left side, but on the right side, I think he's a guy that would get to the field pretty quickly. He's a great recruiting story is what he is, Jimmy. When you think back about it, he comes into town with a group of kids that are on a 7-on-7 team, and he's basically here to snap the ball for 7-on-7. That's why he's on a bus tour just to go do something, and basically is what he's doing. And why he's here, Tennessee says, hey, this guy looks a pretty good-looking athlete. You want to camp? You want to work out? You know, and they take a look at him. They offer him, and he commits to Tennessee. Goes to Alabama. Same thing happens in Alabama. He gets an offer from Alabama. He commits to Tennessee the first time he sees Tennessee, and you're thinking St. Louis, all the Big Ten schools are going to come. That one's going to be really hard for Tennessee to hold on to. Never once did he waver when he committed to Tennessee. And here he is. He got here in the summertime, and he's put himself in a situation to play in the fall. And just an unusual story, but a good recruiting story. Really fun kid to talk to. Mom and dad had a chance to visit with them when they were in town at one point. They're so excited to be a part of Tennessee. And I think you're going to see him. I think you're going to see him early this season, Jimmy, whether Tennessee's fully healthy on the offensive line or whether they're not, because I think he's earned his playing time.
I had asked Jay Graham on the Zoom call the other day about getting the running backs more involved in the pass game. I think Tennessee needs to do that. I think it's important for them to do that. I thought one of the problems they had last year, though, I didn't think the quarterback did a very good job of throwing it to the running backs out of the backfield, whether it was a swing pass, screen pass, what have you. But Brent, I think for this offense to be more efficient, I think they've got to get the running backs in the pass game. What do you think?
Well, I think the quarterbacks were awful at it a year ago. They weren't just subpar. I think they were terrible. But I'm with you. I think part of what makes this Jim Chinney wants to do offensively is he wants to take his receivers and he wants to stretch the field with them. Well, when you do that, you're creating space underneath. So why not get it to the running back in space? I go back and look at what he did at Georgia. I think if he'd have thrown it to DeAndre Swift a couple more times in the SEC championship game, they might have beat Alabama. If Swift would have caught the ball, which he didn't do Sunday for the Detroit Lions, so that's a whole different story, Lions fans. I apologize if there's two of you in town listening. But Swift was a situation where he was open. And I think one of the kryptonites sometimes in this defense is they do leave the back somewhat unaccounted for at some time because of what they're doing with all the matching, the passing, or the route matching and all those things and defending the pass. I think sometimes the running back gets lost a little bit in this defense. So, yes, I think you can absolutely go attack with the running back, and I think that's part of where passing games are. We saw that with the Rams a little bit in the NFL this week. So I do think that's a big part and should be a big part of it, and I think we saw in the bowl game. Look, two of the biggest plays in Tennessee's comeback were dump-offs to Eric Gray that he turned into 15, 18-yard games on that final drive. So, yes, Jimmy, I think they do have to get the running backs involved. I think they have backs who can make people miss in the open field. I think they have backs with good hands. It's on the quarterback to put them in a position to go make a play by delivering the ball on time and accurately, not at their kneecaps.
Our guest, Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Brent, Rob Lewis put a piece together. It's always really appreciated the opportunity to hear from as many Tennessee players as we have, but among those made available this week, offensive lineman Trey Smith, and what Rob takes a look at and paints a picture of is he really has an affinity, an affection, a deep love for just the University of Tennessee, doesn't he?
He does. I mean, he is the phrase "ball for life" is, you know, that he's the if you look that definition up, you would put his picture as one of several there, but his picture would go up there. He certainly appreciates everything that's Tennessee. The responsibility of being a Tennessee football player is something he takes very seriously. He doesn't take it lightly at all. He wants to represent his family and his school in the right way, and I think he has on and off the field. And I think he's excited because I think that Trey feels like he's much better football player this time, you know, this time this year than he was a year ago. I think a year ago he was struggling. He was their best because he was their most talented. He was one of their best five. And I think you saw him get better as the year went on. But I think because of the way practice has been structured this fall, some things they've done with his medication and everything, he was going to get to practice more in the spring. That didn't happen, but he's gotten to practice more this fall. I think he's more prepared to play and be ready to play out of the gate. I expect that Trey will have a big year for Tennessee, and I think he definitely wants to leave this place better than he found it. I think that's a big priority for him on and off the field.
I think it's something to revisit. I mean, you think back to his freshman year, which was the final year for Butch Jones as the head coach at the University of Tennessee, and obviously things didn't go well for the Vols that year, and it was just a disaster of a season that folks couldn't wait to see end. But right there, kind of the last message you were left is you knew a change had happened and something new was coming. That to have Jarrett Garantano and Trey Smith at that point in time speak specifically to, hey, look, we're going to find the guys that want to be with us and build this program and start working in the right direction. You don't see many freshmen in that position with the wherewithal to shake off what had to be just a horribly disappointing first year at his school. And then all of a sudden just say, here's what we're doing from this point forward. We're going to work. And he's been a big part, both as a leader and on the field, of making that happen, hasn't he?
Yeah, he certainly has. And I think the thing you take away from that comment, and I'm glad you went back to that, the one thing I took away from that comment, when I walked out of the room, I didn't feel like it was window dressing. You've heard players say different things when a change happens, and you know, you've heard players after the change, you know, how much they like the new guy or this guy was, the old guy was wrong. I mean, it was not about that. It was just matter of fact, we're going to go roll up our sleeves and go to work regardless of who the coach is, and you're going to be proud of us. And when you walked out of that room, you believed every word he said. You didn't believe that that was choreographed, it was scripted for him, that was from the heart, he meant it, and he was going to back it up. I think that's what makes him a good leader, John, because I think the way he conveys things, people gravitate to. I think they gravitate to his personality. I think they're ready to go to work whenever he tells them it's time to go to work, because I think it's this conviction that he delivers things with that resonates with people, and it certainly resonated with a lot of people that night when they walked out, and everybody went, this guy's got a chance to be really special. He's obviously gone through a very difficult time and dealing with the blood clots and everything that he's gone through. But through it all, he's wanted to get back to being a football player at the University of Tennessee, which is why he's here for his senior year, because he could have very easily left and nobody mm-hmm. would have blamed him had he gone on to the NFL. In fact, some people would have said, yeah, it makes total sense. He probably should. Some people might feel that way still. But he wanted to play for the University of Tennessee as a senior, and here's hoping he has a great year because I know he's put in the work to do so.
That's Brent Hubbs. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. We'll get a break. If you have a question or a comment for Brent, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Sports Talk today, a part of Rivalry Thursday. We're brought to you by OEB Law and Matlock Tire as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The runaway number one in East Tennessee for sports. We are 99.1, The Sports Animal.
If you have a question or comment for Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com, our guest this hour on Sports Talk, the program, a part of Rivalry Thursday. We're here at West High School, where tonight it's the Rebels playing host to Oak Ridge. Tip of the cap to the folks that are just rolling the music on the press box and the loudspeakers. We've gone from Kenny Chesney, the Boys of Fall, to Ray Charles, What I Say, and it has just been a absolute joy to hear the mix. But big time tonight when West looks for a third straight win against Oak Ridge, which would be the third win ever for the Rebels in 11 meetings against the Wildcats. Let's go to the phones where Steve joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Brent, talk about Joseph and the freshman from Catholic, the linebacker, and Banks at linebacker. Talk about them. How have they looked this spring, fall?
Well, I think Morvin Joseph, you know, physically looks the way you want to look. I think he's got some development that he's got to do. He's pretty got to get bigger and stronger. He's cut. He's lean. He's in great shape. But I think he still can get bigger. I think Tyler Barron, who's a young man from Catholic, is probably a little bit further along in terms of being ready to play right now because he's got more size to him. You know, he weighs 30 pounds more than Joseph weighs. And I think you'll see Tyler Barron play early for this Tennessee team. I think he will be in the rotation, getting some snaps. I think you'll see him week one. And I think as for Jeremy Banks, I think he's done a really solid job at linebacker. Again, I think he's a guy that people gravitate to. He brings energy every day, intensity every day. You're going to see him rotating some with Crouch, I think, an inside linebacker, because I think Jeremy Banks has done a good job in this preseason and has put himself in a position not only to play on special teams, but I think to get some linebacker reps as well.
Right. Okay. I tell you guys, and y'all know this, of course, but the situation, is it going to come down to the depth that Georgia and Alabama and Florida and these other teams have compared to our depth? I mean, who gets, you know, who's out, who's not out, and, you know, that type of thing. It's kind of like going to Tunica to gamble.
I mean, you know, I think that's going to be the case for everybody, Jimmy. I mean, you know, you got Drinkwitz at Missouri already announcing that a dozen players are not going to play in the Alabama game next week because they're in quarantine. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. I mean, if you get in a situation where you have a bunch of guys quarantined, then it's going to be real challenging for you, and it's going to be hard. And you know, I think that's put a large part of Jeremy Pruitt's frustrations. I think that's why he's wondered aloud about some things, because we haven't read about Alabama having a bunch of guys in quarantine or Georgia having a bunch of guys in quarantine. Why? I don't know. I don't know their situation. Maybe they're just keeping everything quiet. But what we know is that it's been a problem at some schools. It's been a bigger problem at some schools than at others. And, I think that's what everybody's wondering to know each week is, who am I going to have? And that's why depth is going to be critical. And being able, Jimmy, to cross-train some people to play them in different spots may be a requirement as well.
Well, okay. Hang in there.
You do the same, Steve. We sure do appreciate it. And Brent, that's something that Jeremy Pruitt and the staff not bashful at all about. I mean, they look for – I mean, you just start with the recruiting class. I mean, so many guys they bring in are incredibly versatile to where they have that opportunity to either play positions within their position group or different sides of the ball.
Yeah, and no, they haven't moved a lot of guys around, but, you know, you might get in a situation, if you find out you're going to lose somebody for 2 weeks, then you might quickly move somebody to do something. You know, I just think that the whole key to this thing is going to be control what you can control. Basically, don't panic and deal what you've been dealt and manage it the best you can, because there's just not anything normal about this. And listen, I'm not painting this grim, oh, it's awful picture. That's not what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you just don't know what you're going to get from week to week, or in some cases from day to day. So you've got to be able to adjust on the fly. And you've heard Jeremy Pruitt talk about, you know, maybe his being a high school coach can help him some in this regard. But you really do. I mean, coaches are creatures of habit. They want to do the same structured thing every day, and they want to go about the same game week routine every day. There's not going to be much routine about this fall, mm-hmm. based on what we're seeing so far. And I don't think there's anything to suggest that it's going to suddenly become a normal routine in October. I just think you're going to have to be able to adjust on the fly. And the teams that adjust on the fly and the teams that have depth are going to be the teams that are probably going to be standing at the end of this thing whenever the end of it is.
How much football did you watch last Saturday?
I watched a good bit. It's funny, I ended up watching a lot of Florida State, Georgia Tech, because that was a close, competitive, interesting football game. You know, with you got a coach at Georgia Tech who's trying to completely change a system there, and he's in year two of that, and you got Norvell. How would that translate in? And so I watched a good bit of that game, and then I ended up watching a good bit of Tulane and South Alabama in the nightcap game. And I ended up watching those two games because they're both really competitive football games. And as a football fan, I look for that more than I do the big names. You know, I watched the start of Clemson Wake Forest, and it was very apparent after the second drive where that game was going. So I didn't stay there very long. I went to find one that was more competitive. And those two games were entertaining to watch. And maybe they weren't both at full strength, and maybe guys were having to move and do some different things and play at some different spots or whatever. But they were entertaining to watch, and they were highly competitive. So I watched a good bit of those, and then I watched a good bit of the NFL, some NFL on Sunday, and then I watched the NFL on Monday night.
What was or has been and continues to be the reaction and conversation in the general's quarters and elsewhere at BallQuest.com to the Big Ten kind of reversing its field and and finding a way and setting a path towards playing football in October?
Well, I mean, probably the same, many of the same reactions that you've heard and a lot of people have had. There's, it feels like the Big Ten was going to be out in front leading the way, and then they got down the road and went, wait a minute, what have we done here? We got to do a reversal 180. Now I know they've come out and said, testing, and they feel more comfortable now than they did 3 weeks ago. I think we were on this show, all three of us agreed with the same thing. My biggest issue with the Big Ten's decision in August when they made it was I didn't think you had to make it then.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you had time to kind of see and sort of see where this thing was going, do some more research. I just didn't think it was the need to make an immediate season-long decision at that point. And obviously – there were some Big Ten coaches were vocal and have been vocal. Players have been vocal. Some parents have been vocal. And they fought to get their season back. I think it's more humorous that the Pac-12 is suddenly now acting like they care. Okay? I mean, there's a story out that the Athletics got today where some coaches are quoted anonymously talking about how frustrated they were because they just always followed the Big Ten's lead and this, that, and the other. I didn't hear a Pac-12 coach offer the first rebuttal to the Pac-12's decision. It's like David Shaw went out and said, we made the right choice, and every coach got in line behind him and said, he speaks for us.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Big Ten's playing, and all of a sudden the Pac-12's got some coaches in Los Angeles who are like, hey, we'd be ready in a month.
Yeah.
Where were you 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yeah.
When you didn't stand up and say, hey, we can play. This is a bad decision. We're going to stand up for it. Instead, it was applauded in the Big 12. And now they've done a reversal, which I think is comedy. Look, I don't know if we'll get through a season or we won't get through a season. Only time will tell. But the thing I'll give the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC credit for, not only did they do everything to get to this point to play, none of those three conferences made – a quick decision. They just kind of said, hey, be patient. Let's let it ride. A little bit like the TSSAA did at the high school level. Some coaches in the high school level were mad. We need a plan. Just let it ride, fellas. And let's see if we can get back to a regular season, which for the most part in the TSSAA they have to this point. SEC said, hey, patience. Let's just be patient and see how this thing progresses moving forward. And it gave them time to put a plan in place to play. Did they do it all perfectly? No, I don't think everybody got the fairest draw in the 10-game schedule, but they had a plan to try to go to the last hour to play the season. The Big Ten simply said, oh, we ain't doing that, we're out. And now they're scrambling to say, no, we're back in. We're going to play. Let's go. And so I think the Big Ten looks foolish, and I think the Pac-12 looks even more foolish.
That's Brent Hubbs. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We've got more coming up to join us. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Brent's appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. More with Brent coming up as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
I'm VFL Charles Davis, and it's
9 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
That's how you join us as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. It's Rivalry Thursday. We're brought to you by OEB Law and Matlock Tire Service. Here at West High School, where tonight it's the Wildcats of Oak Ridge against the homestanding West Rebels. And West, the number two team in 5A football in the state of Tennessee, 4-0 on the season. Again, to join us with Brent Hubb, 656-9900, 656-9900.
Brent, I think this is going to be pretty interesting in regard to Jeremy Banks. So Brian Niedermeyer, linebacker's coach, said that he doesn't think that Banks is behind the eight ball, even with the amount of time that he has missed. And we've heard really good things about Banks. Do you think – well, I know Banks is going to get a lot of action, at least I think he will. Do you think he can push for a starting job?
Well, I think it depends on how Crouch plays. I think that they have two talented guys there who are both in pretty similar spots in terms of knowing the position. I mean, Crouch played a little bit there in the inside last year, but he spent most of his time learning the outside spot in the defense. And Jeremy Banks obviously had his situation, which cost him, you know, playing time, but has played in the inside before. So I think that's part of the reason why you got Brian Niedermeyer saying he's not behind the eight ball. He's not behind the eight ball of his competition because they're both pretty similar in experience level at the inside linebacker spot. So I think both will play. I think it'll continue to separate itself. I anticipate Crouch will be the starter. If Crouch plays well, then it'll be harder for Jeremy Banks to get on the field. I think he'll be a part of the rotation there some, but it'll separate itself out moving forward. And I don't think it'll remain a rotation. But I understand why Jeremy Banks is not that far behind, because the guy he's trying to compete for the starting job with is not real long in the tooth at that position either.
So we heard Jeremy Pruitt say that over the last 2 weeks they've had at least 34 players that have been out for either testing positive or contact tracing. Watching a number of games, and you mentioned you watched a bunch of them, it looked like some teams were better prepared than others. I just wonder how hard you think it is for Tennessee to perhaps bring some chemistry to the table and look sharp when you've had that many players miss that many practices.
Jimmy, I think it's going to be really hard, because here's what I don't know to compare it to some other schools that I watched over the weekend. Clemson looked like everybody had practiced every practice in fall camp is what they look like. Now, look, I know Wake's got their struggles, but, I mean, Clemson was pretty dialed in. Their chemistry was good, and Clemson's a really good football team, which we all knew anyway. But they looked like they had a normal fall camp is the way they looked on the field. Some other teams didn't look that way. Now, Georgia Tech had their issues, but they were playing a freshman quarterback. I just don't know those other schools how many guys that they've missed. Have a lot of schools missed 31 players in the middle of fall camp? I don't know the answer to that. But to answer your question, Jimmy, I think that, yes, it has to be hard to have the chemistry and be completely dialed in, particularly with your quarterback and receivers, with the number of receivers that's been out, the run game with the number of offensive linemen that have been out and running backs that have been out. I think there'll be some challenges, and I think that's why you've heard Jeremy Pruitt talk about it being sloppy. And the question is, can they get through the sloppiness early in a ball game and get settled into play? Now, we'll find out in another week, and we'll see how much they can work together this week to get themselves kind of in some kind of shape and in some kind of chemistry that way to play better on a Saturday. But it has to be hard right now because you don't know who you got one day to the next, it seems like.
Let's get a call from Doug. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Doug.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
I was just talking to Sam there. I came in late. I didn't know if you had talked about the South Carolina, where Muschamp decided to start the transfer quarterback from Colorado State rather than Helsinki. And he said, Mr. Kane mentioned it on his report, but I just wondered, I mean, wouldn't that seem like it lead to a lot of dissension on the team?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how popular Ryan Helsinki is on that team, you know, or how I don't know where he's at in terms of the locker room. I've seen it where it can really hurt and affect the locker room. I think it affected the Tennessee football team in 2005 significantly. Uh-huh. With the decision that was made. But I don't know what the locker room vibe is at South Carolina to say, oh, that's a crazy thing. There may be a lot of kids in that locker room going, absolutely, they should have gone with the transfer. He's played better this fall. He should be the starter. Uh-huh. He gives us the best chance to win as a vote, you know, as compared to the popularity. I think one thing that helped that young man who's going to start is his offensive coordinator at South Carolina was his head coach at Colorado State, so the system he knew very well. So he had a leg up. He had a leg up on Helsinki, who was coming off an injury, you know, because he already knew the system, and Helsinki didn't get spring practice to learn it. So when he steps in the fall camp and Bobo's saying, we're going to go this, that, and the other, that kid, the transfer, is going, okay, coach, I got you. And Helsinki's going, wait a minute, last year, you know, Eagle Diamond Right meant this, and now you're telling me it means that. My head's swimming right now. So he should have had a leg up in the competition, in my opinion.
There's another factor, possibly. It could, Helsinki might have missed 2 weeks of practice.
That's true.
You know, we don't know those things, but that could have impacted it as well.
Great point, sure, Jimmy. Great point.
One other question real quick. I noticed you may have talked about it. They moved the dead period to December 31st. Is the December signing period still in effect, or did they move it back too?
No, it's still in effect from everybody I've spoken with. I don't think that right now it doesn't appear they're going to move the February date either. So it appears the signing dates are going to stay the same in football and in basketball, which will get really interesting to see how many kids sign in December. My guess is the bulk of them will. That may mean a lot of transfers a year from now, but I think there's going to be a lot of people who are afraid they're not going to have a spot in February. So they'll go ahead and sign in December, even though they didn't take an official visit. And in some cases, guys maybe even haven't ever seen the school that they're going to sign with in December. But right now, it appears the December date's not going to move.
Wow. So, thanks, guys. Enjoy the show. See ya.
Doug, always appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go next to Jeff. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, fellas.
Hi.
Brent, currently we have 26 commitments. And I mean, in reality, we're probably still openly recruiting 5 or 6 guys. So if you got half of those, that gives you 28 or 29. I'm not asking you, I'm not betting on this, but look in your crystal ball. If you have 28 or 29, who are the 4 or 5 that get to go somewhere else?
So you're not asking me to tell you who those 4 or 5 are, but who are the 4 or 5? Is that right?
No, what I said is I'm not betting on you being right. I'm not going to bet the money on it, but who are the guys going to be short odds to leave?
I don't know. I mean, and even if I had an inkling, I'm not sure it's really fair to the kid to suggest that out there publicly. That, hey, you're going to get cut when I don't have any inside knowledge that you're going to be that way. Look, what I've known in covering this for 25 years is the numbers always find a way to work themselves out, and that's literally the truth. There have been a number of times, and this was back before the early signing date, you sit there with 10 days to go and you go, God, Tennessee's going to get everybody, and they're going to have 34 kids. What are they going to do? And they end up with 24 and don't have a numbers problem. And so – you know, what you have to do, but because kids are still looking at other schools, you got to keep recruiting kids, and it's a two-way street that way. and it will work itself out. Whatever that ends up being, some kid will get cold feet. Somebody may decommit because they've never been here before. Whatever the case may be, it will find a way to manage itself and to have it and to work out. I'm sure Jeremy Pruitt and his staff have a plan, but also know they're not going to tell Mims, hey, you don't have a spot, or Smile Munden, you don't have a spot, or Nylon Green, we don't have a spot for you. They're going to keep recruiting those guys, and if they were to swing and land on everybody, then maybe somebody blue shirts, somebody gray shirts, somebody yellow shirts, whatever, they just find a way to make it work, because it seemingly always happens that way. It works itself out.
Well,
sorry, I'm not rattling off four names for you, man. That's just not fair to those kids. Somebody's going to run on Twitter and say, do what?
I was going to tell Jimmy he cavalierized the question.
I just don't think it's fair for somebody to go on Twitter and say, Brent Hubbs says Jeremy Pruitt's cutting the following four kids, when I don't know that he's going to cut those four kids. And those kids read that on Twitter. It's not fair to the kids. It's not fair to Jeremy Pruitt. And it would be a total guess for me. And I'm not going to guess about some kid's future. I just don't think that's the right thing to do. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be offensive, but that's just my belief in it.
Here's the thing to watch out for. There will be some players that are committed to Tennessee that will decommit over the next few weeks. That's what I would look for.
Sure.
And then you kind of have an idea.
And some kids will probably privately be told they need to look around.
Right.
Okay? That happens. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's fair to those kids to say that publicly if there's never been any conversations that have taken place that way. I'm not going to go down that road. It'll work itself out. There'll be some attrition in the class. There is every year. You go back and look last year at the number of kids they had committed that ultimately did not end up signing with Tennessee because they decommitted, or they were told to look around, or they were told to find a place elsewhere, or whatever. I mean, that's just the way recruiting is these days. It didn't used to be like that, but that's the way it is now. It's very much a two-way street with coaches telling kids to look around and kids decommitting.
Jeff, we appreciate the call. We'll get a break. A final segment with Brent Hubbs coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
In your car, in your office, in your house, in your shower. 99.1 The Sports Animal. Pass the body wash.
Final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk. A final segment with Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com. And Brent, it was, of course, one of the national voices for Rivals that put together a piece on Alabama offensive lineman Rod Orr as he has set his commitment date, correct?
Yeah, next Friday he's going to announce his commitment. And Florida State and Tennessee, I think, are the two finalists there. He grew up really liking Auburn. I think Auburn's been late to the party, and I don't think Auburn's going to be a real factor. I think he's got some good relationships with the staff at Florida State. There's a lot of ties to Jeremy Pruitt and some of the people at Tennessee as well. So we'll see. I would have said a month ago that one was Tennessee. I felt really good about Tennessee. Still think Tennessee's right there, but I think Florida State's much more of a factor than I gave them credit for a month ago. I think Florida State is deep in that one, and the Seminoles are certainly a team to watch there.
So 9 days to kickoff for Tennessee. What do you think are the biggest things, other than getting as many many of his players on the field as possible? What is at the top of the to-do list for Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I think he's got to get more out of his defensive line. That's been the one consistent theme throughout this fall camp, is that he's just not been pleased with the play of his defensive line. So he's got to get more out of that group. That group's got to come together. Play better, play more like we saw at the end of last year. They weren't necessarily dynamic or playmaking at the end of last year, but they certainly held their own in the line of scrimmage to allow those linebackers to make plays. That group's got to play better. I think that's priority one for Jeremy Pruitt and this staff moving forward. I think the other thing, too, is probably try to figure out where you are on special teams, because you've had so many bodies out. What do you look like on special teams with your coverage units? Because you don't want to give up cheap points in a punt return or a kickoff return. because you haven't been able to practice that as much as you wanted to with all the quarantining that you've had going on. So I would start with the defensive line. I would throw special teams in there, not the kickers, but coverage units and that type of thing. And then obviously the one everybody's going to be talking about from now until game day is who's playing. Who do you have available? Who do you not have available? And unfortunately, you're not going to know that one until you get on an airplane and head to Columbia, South Carolina a week from tomorrow.
What can folks find right now at VolQuest.com?
Well, you mentioned the story on Rod Orr. We've got the podcast up as well. We'll have comments from Jeremy Pruitt in just a little bit when he addresses the media here this evening following Tennessee's practice today. We'll have the War Room tomorrow. We will have Austin and I, our podcast work, or our hour work from Nashville Radio. We'll have that up tomorrow. Eric Kane's got a couple of recruiting stories for us. And then we'll have a breakdown of the roster this weekend with our encyclopedia piece from Rob Lewis. So plenty of stuff coming up the rest of this week, this weekend, to get you officially into game mode on Monday. At noon on Monday, Jeremy Pruitt will address the media in his weekly press conference to talk about maybe an opponent at some point in time in that press conference, which will be kind of fun to hear.
Very much so. Hey, Brent, always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next Thursday. Good luck to Eli and the Eagles against Campbell County.
All right. Thanks very much, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And that's Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And Brent's appearance brought to you by our friends at Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Hour number four coming up. We've got a lot before we step aside. And tonight at 7 o'clock, it is Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis. And then at 8 o'clock, it'll be In the Cage, MMA Radio with Vince Ferrara. So that's all coming up after Sports Talk, but we have a conversation with West Rebels coach Lamar Brown. We've got more when regards to Tennessee football. We hope to work in some comments from Tennessee football coach Jeremy Pruitt. But up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6 as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.